Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. And today is Friday, and Friday is the day that Philbert Applebag and I talk about finance and the markets and economies and all sorts of other stuff. And today is no different. Philbert, welcome to the show.
Hello, Financial Philbert Friday.
Financial Philbert Friday. That's good. That's good. That's alliteration. So, there's always stuff going on. Yeah, there's always political stuff going on, which is usually what we're talking about. But there's been this massive bull run in the stock market ever since Trump was elected, and it was really picking up momentum last month. Although this past week, there's been a little bit of a turnaround. That doesn't make a trend. It's been here in America, but it's also been overseas. There's been some developments in Asia. Would you like to fill us in?
Well, the Asian stocks are down. From what I heard, it was due to a tech bubble crash.
A little tech bubble crash. Alibaba, which is, I guess, the Chinese answer.
That's the one.
Yeah, the Chinese answer to Amazon. Yeah, it's looks like it's doing well. I mean, it announced its earnings and everything. I guess its profit margins are down, but other things seem to be going strong. But nevertheless, it lost, I don't know, 6%, 7% in one day, and it's a like I say, it is the Chinese answer to Amazon. It's quite large. And so
Samsung dropped quite a bit too. Last time I looked at it, I think it had dropped 3.1%.
And Samsung, to me, Samsung is a much more impressive company than, whether you're talking about Alibaba or Google or a lot of these other tech companies. And maybe I'm not being fair to these to the software internet companies. Maybe I'm a little bit old fashioned, but Samsung is an industrial company. It's in all sorts of, I mean, it's actually a massive conglomerate. It goes far beyond electronics. You know, it has construction. It's got steel and I think aluminum. It's got all sorts of things. It's a massive, massive conglomerate in Korea. But it's got cutting-edge manufacturing technology in silicon chips. It's something that was not supposed to happen. There were these economic theories about, what was the name of the theory, about later developing countries, they would pick up, there's a product cycle, and, whether it's, if it's steel, maybe steel first gets mass-produced in England, because England was where the Industrial Revolution happened, and then as England starts moving into more advanced things, then it becomes Germany and America, and then it passes on to Japan and Germany and eventually Brazil and India and finally China and other places like that. There's supposed to be a core and a periphery, and the cutting-edge technologies are supposed to be in the core. And Korea was not considered a core country by, at least in my day, by academics in the 80s or 90s. And when Samsung, in the 1990s, started developing and manufacturing cutting-edge silicon chips, that was like a mystery. I mean, there were people who wrote books on that. So I have a huge respect for Samsung. But you say Samsung was down.
Yeah, last time I saw it, they were down about 3.1, I think it was.
Yeah, in one day. You also mentioned something about a cryptocurrency development in Asia. What was that?
It was that a Bitcoin exchange in Japan got hacked. Not Bitcoin itself, but one of the exchanges.
Yeah, an exchange. And one of the cryptocurrencies, there was actual theft of a fair amount. I can't remember what it was. It was like $75 million worth or what. It was quite a large amount. And Japan has a overseeing bureaucracy called the Financial Services Agency, which, at least that's what they used to call it. Maybe now they just call it the Financial Agency. I think it's the Financial Services Agency. And this is going to lead to them regulating more closely these cryptocurrency exchanges. But so the Asian market's got some jitters.
Asian market jitters.
Asian market jitters. The Asian flu. So
it's rippling.
And we don't give advice. We don't give financial advice. And my advice, if I did give financial advice, my advice to regular people would be not to do a lot of short-term stuff, not to do a lot of short-term speculation, because you're in there fighting, competing against institutions that can pay people to watch developments around the clock. Not just that, but can you're competing against people, institutions that have the market power to move the market if they so choose. And so it is like a mouse in a sumo wrestling ring, you know.
Every once in a while, I think you can get lucky if you're willing to risk a lot, but you know,
you can.
Most people don't have a lot of money to risk, and even if you do, it's so risky, you don't want to lose it.
But there's
I don't give advice, but all I do is kind of tell people what I do. And what I do is mainly buy precious metals. It's mainly what I do.
Precious metal. Well,
and so, I don't particularly do it to invest. I mean, really, it's just I feel that it's better holding it in a physical commodity like precious metals and gold and silver than keeping it in the bank. I mean, if you have a few $1,000 in the bank, that's going to draw like 10 cents interest a month, you know?
Right now, I mean, interest rates have been low for a long time.
So, yeah, they can't. I feel that the Fed can't raise interest rates without imploding the economy.
And here's the question. The question, especially when Donald Trump was elected, is would they intentionally implode the economy by raising interest rates?
I don't think so.
I made a prediction shortly after Trump was elected, inaugurated, that he would not reappoint Janet Yellen, and that he would appoint a non-Jew as the head of the Fed. Now, he's done that. Now, is Jerome Powell really going to be any different?
No, we've talked about that.
We've talked about it. My feeling is that there is one subtle difference, that in terms of his basic policy, he's not going to seem any different from Janet Yellen. That as long as things are in this, it's hard to call it normal state, but as long as the status quo, the political status quo, continues, he is going to act pretty much the same way Janet Yellen would. What I do think the subtle difference is, I think that when we get to a point where there's going to be a break in the status quo, where there is, if you got to a point where you had the Jewish power structure, the Jewish power configuration, if that's what you want to call it, if they called for a, let's pull the plug on, let's implode the economy, I don't think he would be as likely to do it. I don't think he would cooperate for strictly tribal interests.
Who, Trump?
No, Jerome Powell. And I know nothing about Jerome Powell other than that he's not Jewish. That's almost all that I know about him. But and so this is just my racism talk.
Yeah. I don't think we're to that point yet.
I don't think we're to that point.
When you're talking about, like, the Jews at the Fed imploding the economy, like lighting the fuse and getting on planes and flying back to Israel before it happens.
Well, I'm not even talking about flying back to Israel, but yeah. I don't think we're
not
think
to that. We're to, I think that would happen if, like, you know, say, you know, in war, sometimes you keep an extra bullet, you know, to, you know, kill yourself in case you don't want to get tortured, you know, you don't want to get captured. And in the same way, I think that that's their final bullet, is imploding the economy, you know, before they run. If it comes to that, you know, if there's enough rebellion and enough resistance to the monetary system, you know, maybe in a few decades, maybe they'll have to, or sooner. I don't know. It's anybody's guess. But I definitely don't think we're there at the moment.
No, I don't think
we'll be there within the first term of Trump's presidency.
I don't know if we will or not. If I was going to bet on it, I would say we won't. We won't get to that point. But I think it's plausible. I think it's not outside the realm of the plausible. I think, you know, we see kind of an ongoing, what you might call a running coup d'etat, running Jew d'etat, Jewish coup d'etat. There's this ongoing effort, using this Russiagate hoax as the main avenue, but you see this effort by the media, by academia, but the media in particular, and much of Congress, to undermine President Trump. They've been trying to maneuver to impeach him. That book by Michael Wolff was designed not so much maybe at impeaching, but also to bring on this 26th Amendment, put that on the table, which is not going to happen because impeachment's easier. It's just that the 26th Amendment doesn't require high crimes and misdemeanors. It's just saying, oh, this guy's crazy, but I just don't see Vice President Pence and a majority of the cabinet lining up behind it, and 2/3 of the Senate. So I don't think it's going to happen. But I think it's just a reflection of the determination by these Jews. Sorry.
Oh yeah, they're mad.
Sorry to say it, but yeah. But Trump's game, the way I've seen Trump's game, is that he has been taking on the Jewish power in the media. And he's been trying to assert himself in immigration. And, of course, the Jewish immigration lobby is massive. Immigration is really their top agenda item because Israel's in the bag. And I think he's been kind of playing a little divide and conquer game of his own, because he's been taking on immigration, he's been taking on the media, but been playing very, very nice to the Israel lobby, although not launching a new war. And he's been playing nice to Wall Street. Playing nice to Wall Street, but once again, he appointed a goy as head of the Fed for the first time since, 1988 or 87, if you're going to count Paul Volcker is a goy, which I do. Okay, so we have a lot of our audience, I'm sure, like you, they have a tendency to want to store value in precious metals, because you can store them in your house, you can hold them, you can protect them, and maybe also canned food and ammunition.
Yeah, they say if you can't hold it, don't own it.
That's right. Now, and of course, a lot of people are very suspicious of the financial markets, of banks, of securities companies, because of the large Jewish role in them. And you know, I, like I said on my program yesterday, it's not that I want to whip up anti-Jewish sentiment. I really don't. I do want to evaluate our situation. I want to evaluate the situation. I do have a harsh analysis of Jewish power, but I don't want to whip up anti-Jewish sentiment, especially if it's groundless. And this is part of the reason I tend to I'd much rather err on the side of caution when it comes to saying this person's a Jew or that person's a Jew. Be that as it may, if somebody was going to invest in the financial markets or invest via the financial markets, there's a number of opportunities you have, a number of vehicles for investing in countries. You can look at a country, look at a society, look at it and maybe invest demographically. You can look at this country and say, wow, they've got a high IQ or low immigration. They're likely to be stable over the next 10 or 20 years. And maybe I should find an investment opportunity that would allow me to take advantage of it. So if somebody wants, you are interested in currencies. And
yep.
Now you do short-term investment in currencies, but would you also consider long-term investments in currencies? For instance, would you consider holding funds in a particular currency over a long period of time because you think it's going to appreciate?
No, I'll be honest, at the moment, no, because no. I don't know of any country that I personally know that would be stable enough, in 5 years. And not to say that there isn't any. I'm just saying that I don't personally know of any. I don't know that much. I'm more like of a trader, I consider, than an investor. I don't really. The only thing I hold more than, 5 years is like precious metals. If you're holding currencies, it's daily, or sometimes by the minute,
Well, if you're holding currencies longer than daily,
for me, at least by the minute.
If you were to hold it longer than then, you don't want things simply to sit in some sort of bank deposit where it's not earning interest or anything. So there would be other vehicles.
It's just so volatile. I know it's just hard for me to imagine staying in a currency for more than 5 years. You would have to have a lot of money in it to be able to do that, I think.
Well, so for instance, there are exchange-traded funds, the ETFs, and you can get ETFs that are invested in a foreign stock market, or you can get mutual funds that are invested in bonds, high-yield bonds or municipal bonds in a particular country, Australia or France or Singapore or whatever. There is a whole bunch of opportunities. You can get these. I've seen this. These high yield bond funds that then, and this gets very complicated, but then are hedged. These are high yield bonds from developing countries or from European countries, advanced countries, but then because they're in foreign currencies, you can get like a foreign currency hedge. You can have it somehow linked to the Brazilian real or the South African rand. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. And the question is, why would you ever want to do such a thing? But you might look at a particular country and say, I think Mongolia's got a bright future, and I want to get involved with Mongolia. We're getting close to the break, but when we come back for the break, I'd like to talk about how one might want to evaluate countries. And we don't have to get too much into the financial vehicles, but just the countries. Okay?
All right, sounds good.
All right, so we'll be back after the break.
know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
I'm the Donald and I count the days till they rule us all, make a slave out of you. You never get away. Everybody wants
and
jokes.
We are back. So, I mentioned Mongolia. I was interested to see a map of the world, an IQ map of the world, and Mongolia was rated at 102. Which is not as high as Korea or China or Japan, but it's higher than most European countries. Now, the European countries are getting dragged down because of immigration.
Uh-huh. Another thing to keep in mind is the country's resources, too, the amount of resources they have.
Yeah, and I'm not out here recommending Mongolia. I just kind of pulled it out of the top of my head.
But right.
But it is a country with a lot of resources. It's got a very sparse population.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah. But... So you can look at resources. You can look at
what rich people do, what people who have a lot of money to invest, what they do. They tend to put a lot of their money where the growth is, like in Brazil and China right now are two of the majors.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so you have...
And then that's more short term, and that's the opposite of what you were saying, I know, but...
Well, it's not, but it can be long term too.
And yeah, that's one thing to look at.
You have these, a lot of exchange traded funds. A lot of ETFs will mix together the BRICS countries: Brazil, Russia, India, China, and you know there's quite a mix in those countries. And Brazil, it's a growth country, but why is it growing? For a while, it was growing because it had a growing population. The population is probably still growing, but not as fast as it used to. But, you know, you look at Brazil, and it's so crime-ridden. There's a lot of corruption. It's, you know, it's got a I think it's less than half white. I think it's got an awful lot of mulattoes and Africans. And so you look at it, and is the future really in Brazil? I mean, it might, but it, whether or not the future's in Brazil, what you were pointing out was, well, it's got growth. And where you've got growth, even if it's growing poverty, poor people are still, in a lot of places, they're still using cell phones. They're still shopping at Walmart-type stores. And so there's still that type of opportunity.
But yeah, there's lots of room to move.
I was talking last summer to a banker, and she was asking my opinion of India, because she thought she was going to do some investment in India. And my initial reaction was, you know, India, it's growing, but, you know, if you look at that IQ map of the world, it's not particularly high, whereas you look at China, and China's got a higher IQ, and, you know, China's been developing very well, and it doesn't have the massive differentials in poverty and wealth. I mean, it has differentials in wealth, to be sure, but not the way India does. It doesn't have this massive peasant class that's completely left behind.
It just seems like a filthy country. It's just people live in filth.
It's filth.
I've
never been there.
Traffic. It just looks like there's no traffic loss.
Yeah, I've never been there.
Haven't either, and I know there's very nice parts of India too. The very beautiful parts.
And I know from people who were traveling there, say 20 years ago, that there was a very large courier industry because the telephones didn't work. I get maybe 30 years ago, there was no way to call somebody on the other side of town. So there was this, you just hire somebody to take a message to the other side of town on a bike. I guess they've leapfrogged over that with cellular technology. But here's the thing. I mean, that's the way I approach it. And so I was saying, no, I think you'd be better off investing in China or Korea or Japan even, which is developed and not growing, but it's at least it's high IQ. On the other hand, India, you know, it's got all these different ethnic groups, but it also had the caste system. And the Brahmin, the higher castes, you know, whether you're talking about the more Aryan north or even in the more Dravidian south, the Brahmin tend to be very, very high IQ. And if you have a population that's, or a society that's rather stable and it's hierarchical, and you do have, you know, more than, if you've got plenty of very intelligent people to be managers, to be engineers, what do you think? Is that a good prospect for growth and for investment? This is a question.
For the United States?
No, I was talking about for India. Well, let's get to that on the other side of the break.
Okay.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, A visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
And we are back. And just before the break, I was posing the question, a society like India that's got this long history of hierarchy, and that seems to be relatively stable, and it seems to be accepted. You've got Brahmin at the top, and you've got untouchables at the bottom, and there's a hierarchy, there's caste, which still exists pretty much, at least if not legally, it still exists socially. You've got plenty of reasonably high IQ people to be managers, to be engineers. And you've had a lot of growth. Is this really a sustainable model? Is this a model that you would want to invest in? That was the question.
For me, no, not in India.
Okay, what about a place like China? Now, the East Asians have...
In China, yes.
East Asians have high IQs. On average, most of these comparative studies show they have higher IQs than Europeans. On the other hand, the IQs tend to be grouped around the mean. And so you don't have the extremes. And my travels in Asia, China, I was there so long ago, but certainly in Korea and Japan, you don't run into a whole lot of stupid people. People seem really competent. You go to the post office and you get very, very good service. And, you know, what they do is a lot more complicated than what our people do, because our post office, all they do is, mail. And in Asia, the post offices do banking, they do insurance, they do all sorts of stuff, and These people are just much more capable. Not just the top 10% or the top 50%, but even like the people of this third quadrant of people in Asia tend to be pretty capable. On the other hand, the Europeans have this much wider distribution, a larger standard deviation for those who are familiar with this statistical term, that you've got plenty of stupid people, but you've got all of these geniuses that you know may bring up the average. And these kind of like super geniuses are more rare in East Europe, in Eastern Asia, despite its higher average IQ. This is the basic conclusion that people like Richard Lynn and others have come to. And it's fair if people want to disagree with that. So my question is, a country like Korea or Japan that has the high average IQ, or China, has the high average IQ, but might lack those genius innovators, is that a good place for investment, or are they always going to tend to lack the innovation and be followers?
I never thought of it like that. One thing you could look at is I would say like the religion of mm-hmm. a country mm-hmm. has a lot to do with like, you know, what I would say like what they can do, you know, I mean, what's acceptable to do with their money and their resources, you know, would have a lot to do with what they believe in.
Well,
so if you're looking around the world, I don't know, that may be one thing to look at.
Well, that's actually a really interesting point, because these psychological studies, one of the things that is studied besides IQ is the ability to postpone gratification. And what do you do when you're postponing gratification? You're saving.
Yeah, smart people can postpone gratification for further gratification. For instance, like, you'll go to the dentist for pain because you know that you'll feel less pain later on over the long run if you go to the dentist and get your mouth fixed.
So there does tend to be the link with IQ, but if you look at the East Asian societies compared to America, and so this isn't necessarily genetic, it could be genetic, but the American rate of savings is way lower than the East Asian rate of savings. Japan, certainly in the 80s and the 90s, had really, really high rates of savings, and the government has been trying to implement policies to spur consumption and deter savings. For instance, they revised the tax law so that that older people would be incentivized to transfer their savings to the younger generation, which would be more likely to spend it, because the younger generation, you know, wants to start families. Maybe they, you know, when you're starting a family, you are spending more than you're saving. There may be a genetic component to it. Maybe it's a cultural component, but yeah, they have the high rates of savings.
Save, save, save.
Now, just a few minutes ago, when I was describing India and asking, you know, if it was viable to have these a country with these Brahmin at the top as engineers and managers, and you asked if I was talking about America. Are you referring to the high levels of Indian immigration to America?
Yeah, that's what I thought you were talking about, the HP-1 visas.
And this is a big deal, and this is something that President Trump is trying to address. And you hear talk from people like Mike Enoch, who used to work in a tech position. He's a software engineer, I believe. He's some sort of programmer. And him and other people will talk about the massive numbers of Indians in particular who come over on these visas. The visas make them more or less indentured servants to the company. They don't have the ability to come and then switch jobs. And so their stay in America is at the whim of the company that brings them here and sponsors them. And then the companies can pay low amounts of money. Now, the downside of it, according to people like Mike Enoch, is that these people really aren't that good at their job. But if you can bring two or three over for the price of one American, at least in some manager's calculus, this is worth it. But, of course, President Trump trying to get rid of this system or undermine it by insisting that whoever is brought over gets paid the same that an American would get paid. And if it's the truth that companies are bringing over these people only because they can, hire two for the price of one, they're not going to want to pay those two the price of two.
And it fills the HR's quotas for hiring, as many brown people as possible.
And that is something. I don't know exactly.
Oh, it is, for sure. They keep track of that.
Well,
it's a straight smack.
I know they keep track of it at yeah. I know they keep track of it at nonprofits. I'm familiar with that. And I would suppose
any employer in the United States that hires over, I think it's only a couple hundred. I think it's either 200 or 250. You may look this up and make sure I'm either right or wrong. But I believe they're required to ask, during the application process, they're required to ask you your race, your ethnicity.
I'm not aware of that. But what I do know is that if you are a nonprofit or you are a university faculty, a faculty member, and you're applying for a government grant, that you have to A, pledge all sorts of diversity. You have to pledge diversity, and then you have to you do have to reveal how many diverse people you have. And this is part of what gets reviewed when you're applying for a grant. So we've really gotten into this state where there's just so much discrimination against white people on so many levels that it's almost impossible for people to fathom. I was talking to somebody recently about what we've been talking about on the David Duke show this week, which is if you Google American inventors, and this is the second day of Black History Month, so lots of kids are going to be doing this, you get a bunch of black people. And the pictures of black people. You might get Thomas Edison and Alexander Graham Bell. I think you can get Tesla. But in Google's top 50 American inventors, they don't even have the Wright brothers. Well, that's what we started with. And then our guest on Tuesday pointed out that if you Google historic Europeans, you get a bunch of black people. You get a bunch of black people. And then we started we took it from there. I Googled white presidents and I got a bunch of pictures of Obama and Danny Glover and Morgan Freeman. And even Cory Booker came up.
Oh, boy.
No. If you Google white women and their boyfriends, you get white women and black boyfriends. If you Google white couples, you get some white couples, but you get a lot of mixed couples. I even did, please play this game at home. I even put in white people, And I got a fair amount of black people in the results. And, do this in Google Images. But I did get this one white baby. And it was the cover of Time magazine asking, is your baby racist? I mean...
Yeah, I remember that.
I mean, Google, how did they get to be this massive, giant company when their search engine results are so skewed? I mean, that's not real. Somebody was telling me today that if you were to Google Conor McGregor the day before or the day after his fight with, who did he fight? The Clyde Mayweather, I think is his name.
Floyd
Mayweather. That you got more results for Conor McGregor than you would get results for Donald Trump when he was inaugurated as president. And this person thought that this means that people were just so not interested in Donald Trump that they were more likely to Google Conor McGregor. And I was telling him, well, Google manipulates their results. They clearly do. And then I brought up all of these search results that I mentioned to you. So they're just, I mean, they're writing us out of history. It's quite amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, about the HB1 visa thing, that's just a smack in the face to the white American worker, you know, that would do the job better if anybody has worked a job and had to deal with one of those. I personally have. And, you know, they can barely speak English half the time or more than half the time. And, you know, they don't know our culture. You know, you could be joking around with somebody and they might take it the wrong way. And you never know. It's just not right. It's not acceptable to me to have to be ruled over by, you know, somebody of a different culture that doesn't even understand, you know, the people that have founded the nation. But that's just my thought on it.
Well, you know,
rant.
A couple of years ago, I was in the State Department. And if you go, when you walk in the front door of the State Department, there's this massive hall. I guess you'd call it a hall, the Hall of Flags. And they've got all the flags of the countries, I guess all the countries that America has diplomatic relations with. And so I was posing for a picture. This is right in the front door. I was posing for the picture in front of a bunch of flags. And this little Vietnamese man comes up to me and in his very accented English told me I was not allowed to take pictures. I thought, you know, why is this foreigner coming up and telling me what I can do inside my own State Department? You know, it's clearly, I mean, if I was taking pictures inside of Victoria Nuland's office, which I did, by the way, no, I'm just saying. No, if I was doing something like that and they told me not to, that would be one thing. But, you know, But that's where we're at. So
yeah. The ultimate point is that it doesn't matter how stupid or how smart these people are. It matters that they are a different race than the white people, and they are here. They aren't here to take your jobs. They are simply here to replace you. I mean, most jobs are going to be taken by robots, you know, in the next century, and these people aren't here to take our jobs. They're simply here to replace us.
And then, coming into immigration, to come flying into immigration, you know, in LaGuardia or I guess JFK or O'Hare Airport or LAX, and then you've got Africans coming up and telling you which line to get into. Recent African immigrants who are wearing these badges of the TSA, telling you where to go. Why?
Yeah, like Trump said during his when he was still running for office, he said, well, Europe doesn't look like Europe anymore. And you know he knows that about America too, you know. But
so then this is the question. Getting back to the investment, I tend to favor East Asia because they're high IQ and they don't have a lot of immigration. I tend to favor Russia because it's high IQ. It's a little more multicultural than the East European countries do, because it has these various minorities, many of which are Muslim. But it also has strong leadership. And you were talking about Australia and Canada, which, while they have high levels of immigration, at least they're not as random and shitholian as what's going on in the United States. We are going to break. We will be back with the last segment in just a few minutes.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month, and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Welcome back to the show. This is the last segment. It's a short one, but let's look at the United States and maybe what an investor would from overseas. Would the United States look like a promising country, or is it an India that is going to have a caste system, a racial caste system, maybe with Jewish ruling elite and an Asian / Indian Brahmin managerial class, and then some whites, and then maybe a black class. What's it going to look like?
Well, they say by 2050, over half the United States' population will live in urban areas. So, I guess in a way, it would look like India. I mean, I don't know if it's really comparable. If you look at some of the images of India, but
and when you say urban, I take it you mean not, I guess in a not certain suburb, sense. not suburban, but actually urban.
Yeah, not all in cities, but you know, suburbs, major metropolitan areas.
It's amazing how big some of these third world cities have gotten, like Calcutta. It used to be that in order, I mean, if you looked at an almanac or an atlas from 1950, 1960, there really weren't any cities of more than a million people in Africa. India was just so crowded, but still people were living overwhelmingly in the farms, in the countryside. And now you've got this.
And nobody talks about overpopulation anymore. Like in the, you know, with 20, 30 years ago, people talked about that all the time. Yeah, I don't hear much about that anymore.
It was, yeah, 50 years ago, I remember going to the Smithsonian, going with my father and him pointing out there was an exhibit, and it was basically a rope that was hanging from the ceiling, and it came down in parabola shape. But you know the parabola that is exponential population growth, and the rope was color coded, and it was showing this was the population in 1600, 1700, 1800, and just showing it going up and up and up, and it really alarmed me. And in the 1960s, 1970s, that was a word that you heard a lot, and it certainly had an impact on white Americans and probably Europeans. The Japanese and East Asian birth rates went down. The Chinese, it was through coercion, but those birth rates went down. Even they've gone down in a lot of countries, but the African birth rate is through the roof and shows no signs of decline.
You're right.
And people are just whistling past.
I kind of think that that's the main reason that we haven't heard much about overpopulation anymore. Instead,
it would be racist.
Overpopulation has been replaced with global warming or, you know, climate change. And with the climate change, you can blame it on the white man, you know, for having all the technology. And, you know, with overpopulation, well, you can obviously see, you know, who's overpopulating, like you were just hinting at, Africa.
Africa in particular.
Excessive overbreeding.
Yeah, and then also the Muslim world, but Africa in particular. And, my final thought, I think there is global climate change, and I think humans have something to do with it. But where I part company with the Al Gore crew is that it makes absolutely no sense to talk about any kind of measures if you're going to ignore African and, you know, other third world population.
It's only Western countries that have to pay up.
It makes no sense. If they're going to overpopulate, there's no solution. Well, Philbert, thank you so much for coming on again. I always enjoy this.
Again, thank you for having me. It's always fun.
And we will be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio.
Philbert.
Go to Philbert's channel and listen to his music.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Good morning. I'm here to give you an update on